Hello and welcome to Not Pointers. We're your hosts, Mark.
And Stephen.
So Stephen, I know you have been on vacation and this recording will be coming out like at least, I think, 2 or 3 weeks after this actually happened, this incident. But there was this incident on a Friday, by all means, on a Friday, where we never deploy because you should never deploy on Friday. I think that's more or less a joke because I know that so many people just ignore that because you just have to meet the deadline, which coincides with Friday, whatever. But yeah, an update was released and many, many critical infrastructure Windows PCs no longer started up. And I think it's like the irony is like the piece of software that was installed on those systems was especially dedicated to systems that should always be running or like are just like critical to many, many operations. So a lot of other systems that are not considered as critical, they were still fine. I think there's some irony in that. But yeah, I mean, did you get the news wherever you were, lying on the beach?
Well, yes and no. Because we flew home on the Thursday in front of it. Yeah. So we flew home and we were home at like 1 a.m. So we went to bed and I slept a lot. And then the next morning or I don't even know if it was the morning or the afternoon when that broke. But yeah, I sort of woke up to it. We all had something like, yeah, we dodged a bullet here because if this would have taken down us, then we would have still been stuck there, probably, or at least delayed. Like you could say you have a day longer of a holiday, but it doesn't feel like that at all, probably.
Well, I think it's like it really depends how flexible you are with your standards of for what a vacation means. I mean, usually especially if you travel with kids like you do. It's like, yeah, I mean, vacation is like if you're on the beach and you've got a hotel room and food is not an issue and stuff like that. And when it's like, yeah, we don't no idea when you might be able to fly, but, you know, just stay around and you're at an airport. I mean, yeah, I don't know if that counts as an additional day of vacation per se, but
no, just regularly spending like the 2 hours that you need to be there in front of your flight with two kids. That's already like, when are we flying? When is it starting? Is this our flight? Is it starting? Are all these people going to the Netherlands? No, they're all talking Italian, so I'm assuming they're going to Italy.
Are we there yet? The airport version. Yeah.
Yes, and that's 2 hours. So let's say this thing would have taken you like half a day, then shoot me now, please.
Oh dear. Yeah, so for me it was like quite strange because I remember like I didn't really have it on my radar on Friday. I generally don't read a lot of news, and when I'm at work I don't really have a lot of time to like check whatever's going on instead of whatever's happening at work. And so like the one thing I noticed was I got like an app installed on my phone for my training where you can check in and stuff like that, and that was down. And so I was like, okay, that's a bit interesting. And so the training app that we're using at the box that I'm training is mission critical, and they also have that software installed. I don't know.
Apparently.
It was running again by the evening, so it might have been just a weird coincidence. But someone said at lunch, yeah, you know, the airport is also experiencing issues, and I still made a joke, oh, it's always DNS, blah, 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 blah. And then like in the evening, I read the news and I go like, whoa. This was a bit more serious, and yeah, the poor people that then, I mean, like the aftermath is like you got people that had like these secure laptops, so like you turn on BitLocker in Windows, so your disk is encrypted, and once the side effects of this was that you had to then start up in secure mode, and then you have to enter in a very, very long passkey so you can get it back into your disk. And I heard stories that people had that passkey stored on a different system which was also impacted by that, so you could no longer access those. So I mean, in the worst case scenario, I mean you were just screwed by this, which is very, very unfortunate, especially since I think it wasn't even a software update that was happening. It was, I think it was a configuration file in the end that changed. So yeah, but that brings us to our topic of today, Stephen. How can we mitigate these things in our world? I mean, we're mostly talking about mobile apps on the show and .NET applications maybe in general, but I know we have touched on this topic a bit in the past here and there, but I think having this incident in hindsight, I think there are many best practices that we can look at, and maybe we could, and let's have a look what of those apply to us, or what have we seen and done in the past in the field, so that our customers do not get this huge slap in the face, nothing works, bosses screaming at the top of their voice that you now have to fix this. Yeah, so what have you been doing, Steve?
What have
we? I'll just throw the ball over to you, the great segue. I think there are many topics. I think it starts quite early, right? You can say like avoiding incidences like this. They're not just after you deploy something where you can handle things. I think it's also like in the planning phase where you can identify certain risk factors and see how you want to handle it.
Yeah. Like, if, for example, one of the things that you could do, and that's fairly straightforward, even if you have an app that is in the store. I believe you can deploy it to a subset of users first. Like, you can stagger updates so that only a small group of people gets your app update first, and then you can listen in on how that's going, like in general, and decide to either pull it from the store again or roll it out to a broader audience. Like all the major platforms, Google Play and the iOS one, they all have features that allow you to do that kind of stuff. So instead of just doing one big bang rollout, that would already kind of limit your scope of potential issues. That does require some planning, obviously. That's not something you just do without thinking about it. And since you mentioned it was an actual settings related thing, I didn't even catch that part of the news yet. Something like, for example, an Azure Key Vault type thing to store your settings, where they're all stored remotely in a centralized location. So you just adjust it there once and don't need to roll out some new updates to all your clients. That's also, I think, a pretty good solution for something like that, or at least in this case, maybe it could have been useful. So what Azure Key Vault basically is a, name says it, it's a little vault where you can store settings in Azure, and all your clients just go grab the settings from there instead of having them baked into your app locally, which means you'd have to roll out a new version of the app itself. And in our case, what I think also maybe complicates matters a bit is that while Windows updates, they're sort of, you can, well, there's two flavors, I suppose, right? Like a Windows update, typically you have system admins that roll that out and install those. Or if it's a machine you own yourself, then you do it whenever you feel like it, which is next time I reboot, which is 6 weeks from now, probably.
When I feel like it.
When you feel like it. But in the mobile world, obviously there are some mobile device management solutions, but I don't know if you're anything like me, then your updates for apps also kind of linger around. I don't always hit that button. I know there's an option to automatically hit that button, but yeah, so you're kind of like dependent on the user to trigger updates. So if one of these things breaks and the user decides to never update again, then you're kind of screwed. But yeah, like an MDM management piece of software could allow you to push updates.
I think the MDM solution is viable for if you're in an enterprise setup. And I think you touched there on a few interesting points. Maybe we could roll up again. I mean, one thing is if you're in a public store, then you usually will not use an MDM solution, you can, but yeah. The thing is like there, I think the staggered updates, they can bring you certain security as long as you've got like the the logging infrastructure implemented in your applications, that you can also see that something starts going wrong in the new version, and then also be sensitized on these new versions that are out there to see if they're still running okay. And I think a lot of it comes, I mean, there are many, many topics that we can look at. I think one major thing that we can say, or that you now touched up on in the end, is I think, like, if you're a mobile developer, usually the mobile phone will still work even if your app is borked. There are exceptions. And if you are one of those exceptions, I think we will touch on later on a bit on this, how you can mitigate those risks. Probably if you're already operating such an app, you're hopefully already using many of these strategies or even more. And so I think, like, one of the first pieces that you will then have to know is, like, hey, when I write an app and I make an update to the app, it's not always ensured that the user will actually install the latest update. So if I release something with a bug in it, it might be quite a while until the user actually makes the update. And there might even be users out there that do not know how to update the app. They might have the auto updates like configured, but in my experience, I have the auto update configured and I usually still manually update my apps. Maybe I'm just doing something wrong here, but yeah, that's just me. And I want to say, like, it's also like in the mobile world, we can't really roll back. So if we got a bad version out there in the store, the only way that we can fix this is actually by deploying a new version. And I think there are, like, many myths ranked around the store. Like, even if you deploy to the store, Apple and Google, they will quite thoroughly test your app. But it doesn't mean that they will test, like, every piece of functionality in your app. So normally what they're out to look for is, do you use the API properly, or are you using anything, like, in an illegal way according to their EULA? And do you have all the localizations in place, and. So it's they look at certain aspects very thoroughly, and they also look at some parts which developers like to ignore, like the localization and stuff like that. And do you have all your app images in the right localization for the store, so languages that you actually want to propagate your app in, stuff like that, which is also valuable feedback sometimes, even though it's mainly a pain in the neck when it actually comes back, or for, at least for me. But yeah, going on. So, I mean, you got those things, but they don't really check the functionality within your app. So you never assume that only because you're going into the public store and the fee that you pay for your store account actually covers a professional testing environment. So you won't get that. And I think from there on forward, there are, like, other aspects that you might always want to consider when you do an update. So whenever you do an update and you have some breaking changes within your app, for example, you store data on the file system that might be in a local database or in files, and you break that file structure, how can you ensure that the user will still be able to use the app on forward? Also consider scenarios where he has the old file structure, you make an update with a breaking change, but he doesn't get that update. He gets the update after that, or a few after that. And those, I think, there's a few of the critical things that usually should come up during planning. So whenever you have a scenario where that occurs, and I mean, I know all the best practice books will tell you don't make breaking changes. And of course they're right, but sometimes they happen. And when they happen, I think it's very important to plan for and not just hope for the best, because there's nothing more frustrating for users, or a better way to lose users than having an app that suddenly is balked and you have, like, been pouring your life into it, feeding it information, and suddenly everything is gone. I mean, starting over from that point is a tough ask, I think. So we now talked about the store. From my perspective, I usually do a lot of enterprise apps. So my use space is not, like, out in the wild. I've done some of those in the past. And I think one problem there you often have is you cannot test every device that is out there or every configuration that the users have done to their device and stuff like that. So that becomes, like, quite tough. And I think that's also where the staggered deployments come in and can be really helpful. In an enterprise setup, you're a bit more controlled, because usually companies, they will issue a certain device type, or you will know, like, which devices you will support during testing, stuff like that. It doesn't completely omit the public store scenarios. Many of the apps are actually published in public stores, but it's a bit more contained. But what we often end up doing there is like also having like different environments so you can test stuff through, and also that you can do these scenarios. I don't know, do you do the same thing for your apps in the past, Stephen?
To a certain degree. Like you said, there are so many devices out there that there's no way that you can cover them all. I wish. Like Android alone goes back 6-7 versions still to this day. There'll be devices out there with Android 9 or 10 while we're at 15, 16, somewhere in that range. So that's a lot of space to cover just on the Android side alone. iOS has that nailed down a bit more, but they're also quite... There's also quite the range. So yeah, you don't have devices like that lying around for all the scenarios. So what we typically do wherever I've been so far, at least, is to sort of get an idea of what the user base roughly is. If it is a public-ish facing app, or at least it's in the store, you can get statistics on that without all too much of a problem. You could use external tools to collect those statistics yourself if you want to. And basically what we typically do is we get an idea of what the most common devices are, get a few of those, and that at least we know we cover the majority of our user base, or at least an overwhelming majority. And there will be problems in devices that we can't really replicate, most likely. But yeah, that's then either getting one of those devices if we really have no idea how to fix it, or you have to make do somehow. At least that's been my experience. But there definitely are scenarios where you're like, okay, I don't have this device. This Android version is really old. There's 2% of our users that are having this issue. Depending on how many users you have, that could be significant or not. But yeah, those are I think the most tricky scenarios that I've come across, at least, where you're like, okay, I don't quite know what's going wrong here, and I'm also not quite sure if we should dedicate a whole lot of resources to fixing it, or whether at that point you're better off telling the user to either upgrade his device or stuff like that. Like typically some of those issues are caught in contractual agreements, I would say also. Like we only support Android current minus 2 or 3, something like that. Those kind of agreements typically do exist. So when push comes to shove, you can always point at that. But that's not really typically what you want to lead with. You want to try and see if you can fix it at least. But yeah, I've noticed both ways basically. Like sometimes people just point at the agreement. This isn't it. Get a new device. Get a new something. Sorry. Or we try and fix it. And if there really isn't something we can do, then yeah.
I think there's always things to keep in mind. And I think a lot of developers sometimes forget it because we're like software engineers and we're like tuned into, I have a problem. And then the software engineer goes, okay, how can I solve this problem? And like this way that you, I think it's always important to not only have the view of the software engineer, but also of the business when it comes to these things. And that I think counts for all of these things that we said in this podcast and also we'll be saying during this pod, is if it makes sense from a technical perspective, does not mean that it's also a viable thing to do from a business side, because the amount of money or the amount of time, use, costs, etc., they will be so grand compared to the outcome that it just does not make sense. And many users might prefer that instead of supporting some very strange or very outdated device platform, that you actually bring new features, which they also take time, and people that are working on this backwards compatibility stuff or this strange device will be taken away to do this. And so it can make total sense that one does it, because one sees like, yeah, but this is like the main case of the main user base from our app. They're actually using this strange device, so we have to invest the time. But it could also be that if you got a very wide adoption, that it's just not feasible for you to do this. And then an apology email or some general standards will then be applied. Another thing that we often do is having different deployment environments to also test this. This is especially something you can do in an enterprise setup. I also see it in a public setup though, like the Swiss National Railway application. You can get the main one, and if you can get a preview one. The preview one, you will get like certain features that will be coming later on in the main application. And so you can like say like, hey, if you're willing to take a bit of a risk, and I think like the risk is like super minimal because the app never let me down. So it's not like the first thing that you want to do. It's maybe like something down the road. But if you've got like very technical users that would love to get their hands on the new features, and you might, and you know, like if something happens to them, they will probably be also able to articulate a bit better what their problems are. And if not, you can also always like point them back at the main application where it's like fully baked, or like more of these paper cuts are being excluded from until it gets there. Can be also a great way, because if you then have like a major issue that went through all the testing gaps, and people, I assume you always do testing before you deploy something, and unit tests or automated tests alone do usually not count. It's always great to sort of like at least one human sanitize, even if it just clicks through the app at random. But there are better ways than just clicking through at random. But yeah, so because if you don't test, it's a bit dodgy what you're doing. Anyhow, so moving along, but once you've done all that and then you push it out, there are always scenarios that you might not have thought about in your test cases or in your test scenarios, or that your testers just did not come up with that they could do that, especially if your testers are developers. We tend to go our known paths and not change our trotted ways. And someone might see like, in this case, there's actually this button here. And the software will be like, yeah, there's that button there, but it actually makes no sense to press it in that case. And someone will go like, oh, well, I'll press it anyway. And then suddenly the app explodes because, yeah, you could. And if you could, you can. And if you can, someone will do it. And then you will have all those fun scenarios. So to mitigate one way to mitigate that, you only find that out in production, is actually having pre-stages. This is also like what you can do in backend scenarios. So you try to simulate a production-esque environment as good as you can. And I think you can hear from my choice of words that it's not 100% production, it's production-esque. But you will be able to detect a lot of issues, especially like if you, it goes like two ways. Like from one way, in my experience, you don't want to push out releases too soon. So like if you've got like the Nike builds, you know, like the bleeding edge, you might know it from VS Code or stuff like that. There are pieces in there, they will not work. And if you put them in front of people that expect everything to work, yeah, they will be very upset at you. And you will then have to explain to them like, yeah, well, that's what you get when you subscribe to the bleeding edge. But if you offer them something that has been a bit more sanitized, like more than one person has clicked through a bit on it and stuff like that, and so it's been a bit looked at and it should be okay. And you then give it to people that like your normal users, you will then get again additional feedback. Especially usually it always spreads out. So the earlier versions you get, like the more just like hot off the press they are, the smaller number of people will be that actually looks at them. And the more you go down to the side of production, the more people will be using it, or the more complex the systems will be getting. That being said, I think there is like no statistical chance that you will never ever deploy bugs to production. That's just a sad fact of life. But there are many things that you can do to mitigate that risk. And I think like once you've done your testing, automated testing, manual testing, if you have the time and budget and it makes sense business-wise, you can also do the UI tests. And then you go and deploy it maybe to a small circle that will then use the app, or you at least get an email from them that they looked at it. I mean, that's oftentimes a problem that I see with these like test releases in a small circle, is do the people actually take the time to really test it? It's like some do, because they're then like also responsible. If you push it out to production, there will be the people that also will be on call and stuff like that. So they got a bit more, let's call it internal motivation to do that testing a bit more thoroughly. But once you're out in production, that's when, as mobile developers, I think these staggered deployments, they can be really nice. There's also the option of A/B testing. But in my opinion, that's usually more used for design stuff for UX experiences. You can also, that's not true. It's like that, or you got like an experimental thing that where you want to do a performance improvement or something like that, and you actually want to see how does that play out in real life? Because whenever you got like these performance improvements, some things you just cannot test in the laboratory setup of automated tests. Some things they just have to be out there in the wild to really get to see the feed and the information going in. Those things are quite sophisticated to do A/B tests. I mean, you will have to have quite a bit of planning up front, and you also have to have the instrumentation/logs in place so you can actually see what's going on, so you can make that decision. I haven't seen many projects using that because usually they're just too small to actually go forward with that. But the staggered deployments, I think that's something you get more or less for free with the app stores. So that is something that if you don't have the resources or the time to actually do a lot of like small test circles or like grow the circle within you with like a true user base. I think that is certainly something that is something you should look at, because it's for free. And if you got the instrumentation, you got like fewer people screaming at you. I think you can put it like that. I mean, even if CrowdStrike would have rolled out like that, so if they would have had staggered deployments, and I think they're looking at that now as a consequence from this thing. And many people go like, how can something so big not do it? And it's like, yeah, humans, I guess. I don't know.
In my experience, it typically is always the question, how could this not already be a thing? And that's because it never went wrong, basically.
I don't know what the consequences will be. I mean, a lot of money has been lost in this. There are now guesstimates going up, and the numbers are quite staggering. There might be consequences for CrowdStrike, and one of the resulting things might be that these deployment standards actually become more mandatory. This is what speculation on my side, but there have been rumors in the software development circles for quite long that maybe if a large enough incident actually happens where we see that the systems were not in place, this will become a huge issue. And I think this is also something I want to put out here is like, I hope there won't be ever this thing where they go like, oh yeah, actually it was Joe's fault, because we checked the logs and we saw Joe make the final change and push it out. If one person can bring your entire system down, it's usually that your processes are not good enough. I think trying to never make mistakes as human beings is not a good strategy. A better strategy is to expect that some errors will be made, and to then see that the impact that those errors have actually do not spread out into the entire world as it did. And so, yeah, I mean, I think there will be some interesting consequences from this. I also saw that the EU is to blame because they forced Microsoft to open up those APIs for security incidents and stuff like that. It's an interesting take, but I don't know if that's the right thing to do, like having all these little monopolies going on. But one of these things, I just think it usually comes down to be aware that if you're successful, a lot of people start using your products. And once you got that success, I think you owe it to your customers to ensure that you keep them out of harm's way as good as you can. And there is always, I think, in my opinion, it's always important to realize that many people try to do their best. Sometimes they just don't know. If it happens at such a grand scale, it's sometimes a bit harder to accept this, that errors happen. But there are strategies out there that will help you mitigate it. I just want to say, if ever you have an error in one of your projects and one person gets all the blame, I know that leaders usually take the blame for stuff like that. But if it's like a normal programmer, Joe or Jane, who then suddenly gets all the blame because she, in the git blame, wrote that line of code where the bug was. I don't know. I wouldn't see the blame solely on that person. I would also question highly the process that was there to, which actually let that line slip out into production. Yeah.
There's a long way typically from the line you write to the line being in production.
Sometimes.
And there's a few sometimes. People along the way. Typically.
I mean, it has been said on sometimes. This show, I like right-click publish. I mean, I'm just saying, there is not a lot of systems in between right-click publish and the production.
That is true.
So, yeah, but that's why we have these systems in place. And I think that's also why some people say, like, yeah, I know right-click publish is like super easy, but if you're running a large thing, or it can also be a small thing that is very critical to certain people, it might be better to have systems in place that will not let you do that anymore, because you might be under pressure and you might push it too early and you totally forgot to do check 23, which is clearly mandated in the checklist. So if you do it, you screwed up. And you screwed up by not reading the document because you're under pressure, and. And I think that's what computers can really help us with, because computers, they usually don't feel the pressure. I don't know where AI is going in the future, but right now, they will just stubbornly go through the process that you taught them they should do for whatever they have to do. So yeah, use that.
This whole scenario, like, I still always get this little icky feeling that how easily stuff is disrupted in tech, obviously. Like, for example, if Cloudflare goes down for, say, an hour, like, how many stuff actually breaks down completely to shits? Like, it's so fickle, seemingly, from time to time, where, like, just a few strategic things need to go down and, like, everything's just gone. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm doom thinking or something, but kind of scares me from time to time.
I mean, these doom thinking scenarios, they can be like quite interesting. I've done them sometimes for certain projects where we had to have like a certain fault tolerance, and it's tough. I mean, I remember, like, I think Teams once went down from Microsoft and stuff like that, and Teams is running on multiple servers around the world, right? So they already had this in the back of their heads, like, we cannot have like a single server or a monolith where everything runs at one point, and we have to scale this out, and we have to have this running on multiple things that it works. But even then, it seems, I don't have any hard facts on this, but it seems like they must have had like some services that all those relied on, and those services were running probably on one location or one server or something like that. And I mean, it can be something as simple as whenever you start up, you quickly make a ping home or something like that, and you must do that ping home. Like, the developer did not think that could ever go wrong, right? Then you go up to that line, you try to ping home, and it doesn't work, and so you crash. So, I mean, I've seen stuff like that, and it's just like, it can be so frustrating. I mean, it's just lately once had a software that I installed, and I was not in the interwebs with it, and it just would not come up. It would just be stuck on the loading screen. So you had to give that system access to the interwebs so it initially would come up. And it's stuff like that. It's small things, but I mean, suddenly you got like a dependency and you do not realize it. And then you only realize when it goes down. I mean, I know there are many strategies, like the chaos army comes into mind, where they're like services that will kill certain stuff or make your network bad and. And I mean, those are like fun things, I guess, to do, but it's also like very complex and heavy to do it like in real life, because once you know which are the critical systems that are right now impacting everything, you would fix them anyway. And it sometimes takes like these real world things. So yeah, I think on the note that we could end is, when we test in production, because in production, if we will know if something fails.
That's where the shit really hits. Yeah. Did you notice, by the way, I don't know if you've read this part of the story, they, from CrowdStrike, they sent out a voucher to people affected, like a $10 Uber Eats voucher. And then subsequently, because so many people used the voucher, Uber Eats flagged it as fraudulent, which was like, you can't make that shit up. You just can't.
There was, I think first there was like the critique that it's only $10, like, you know, people were working over the weekends and stuff like that.
I've lost hours of my life.
But I think that just shows how life sometimes is. It's usually not just one thing falling over. It's just like thing after thing after thing after thing after thing after thing starts to fall over. And you can just see like how these, it's a complex world that we live in. And some things just haven't been thought through. I mean, that fraud detection system was in there for a very good reason, I guess, and it fired off at the completely wrong moment, which made someone who was already maybe a bit frustrated even more frustrated. But I guess that's life.
Maybe they'll bring out a new voucher. Another 10 bucks for you.
And with those 10 bucks, this has been the end of our show. We're your hosts, Mark Alibone.
And Stephen Davison.
Be sure to like and subscribe and leave us a note on the socials. Until next time.
Where am I going with this? Jeez. Bye-bye.
Signing off.